tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 17th of August 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, Professor Jason Arday is still in the news. We were talking about him on the Friday podcast the week before last. Talked about him a little bit more last Monday. Of course, he's been the centre of a lot of controversy about things that he'd said. Things such as running 600 miles in 6 days with a broken leg, not being able to speak until the age of 11, not being able to read and write until the age of 16, and then he was made into a professor by Cambridge University. And he didn't merit being a professor because he hadn't he'd actually plagiarized his work, and they didn't actually give him that professorship because of his work either. They just gave it to him because they said it was an inspirational story. But the story wasn't true. And of course, if you are going to be a professor, especially the youngest black professor of Cambridge, then you're going to be the center of media attention. And he was the center of media attention for the last few years. He was been invited onto BBC programs, for instance. In the news reports, the left loved him. They thought he was a fantastic person because he was a young black professor. Well, now that there's been all these allegations of plagiarism against him, and it's been shown that his thesis was plagiarised, and all these falsehoods that he was claiming have been made public, there were a lot of news articles about him last week, and unfortunately, he has committed suicide. And on the left are blaming the so-called racists and the people on the right. But it wasn't the racists and the people on the right that made him into a professor in the first place, was it? It was Cambridge University that made him into a professor. They're the ones that are responsible for this. They promoted a simple-minded man as being an intellectual heavyweight when he wasn't. And all that Jason Arday did is give Cambridge University what they wanted. They wanted to hear these fantastic stories, so he told them fantastic stories. And they made him into this professor. Dr. Edward Dutton has pointed out it's rather like parentification, where you turn a child into a parent, with Jason Arday being the child and the irresponsible parents being Cambridge University. They effectively promoted him way above his station and expected him to be able to deal with that. Of course, he wasn't able to deal with that. I think in older terms, he may have been referred to as somewhat of a simpleton, is the word that we used to use for these sort of people. And to then make him into a professor is absolutely scandalous. And of course, the end result is that he has committed suicide, which is very sad for all the people involved. I mean, if he'd stayed alive, perhaps he could have given some interviews about this and about what had happened to him. I don't think anybody was criticising him out of malice. They were criticising Cambridge University for having created this situation and effectively made a mockery of all the degrees and the scholars and the professorships and the PhDs that they actually hand out at Cambridge, because there is now going to be doubt over all of them, doubt over all professors, whether they actually deserve to actually be made into a professor. What about his students that are all going to be asking for their money back? And a lot of their students apparently did write in and complain about him and say, look, this man isn't suitable to be a professor. Of course, they were all accused of racism. Well, let's have a look at what is being talked about this in the news. This article comes from Breitbart. The headline is, UK left blames death of ex-Cambridge Professor Arday on racism and media scrutiny of plagiarism claims. And of course the media are going to scrutinise claims of plagiarism, and a professor is going to have his work scrutinised. I mean, that's what a professor is for, so that you can look at the work that they have created, because it's supposed to be of such a astounding intellectual ability that people should want to read it and take what is written there as fact. But of course, his work was plagiarised, and he didn't really know much of what he was actually talking about when he saw him being interviewed. British leftists have attempted to blame racism and media scrutiny for the untimely death of former Cambridge professor Jason Arday, who sensationally resigned last week amidst plagiarism allegations and accusations of fabricating his backstory. On Friday afternoon, Cambridge's youngest ever black professor, Jason Arday, was found dead at a London address at the age of 41, just days after resigning from his post as Professor of Sociology of Education amidst swirling controversy and claims that he had engaged in plagiarism. Now, they haven't actually said that he killed himself, but what they have said is that it was an unexpected death, but it was not a suspicious death. So we're not actually being told about these details. There is a GoFundMe support, I think, and I think there's something like £40,000 had been raised for him, or raised for his family, that is, the people that are left behind because of this. According to a Substack article last month from University of Ghent philosopher Nathan Kofnas, who was fired from Cambridge's Emmanuel College in 2024 after expressing race realist views on IQ differences, Arday's thesis had been flagged by plagiarism detection software. Now, I guess some people might ask, well, what is a race realist? Well, it's somebody who believes that race is a fact, is a biological fact. And you can tell that race is a biological fact by looking at IQs. And you can look at statistics, average IQs. Now, I was looking at this the other day because a year or two back, you could just type into Google, you could put IQ average by country, world IQ average by country, something like that. You could put into Google and the results would come back and it would say that countries like Ghana had an IQ of about 70. There were some other African countries had an average IQ of 65, 68, which is 30 points lower than the average white IQ. And I did this the other day and I had a look and it came up with the lowest African country had an IQ of 75. And I thought, well, how did they change this? How did this come about? Because we've had these statistics for a long time now and they have been checked. They have been verified. In fact, there was a Nigerian researcher recently who put out a YouTube video and he tested these statistics and he went out and he tested people on the street in Nigeria and he found that, yes, the average IQ was 70. So how does that explain these new results, which they have when you look in Google and it says that the average IQ is 85? Where does that come from? Well, if you think about it, where are they going to be doing these IQ tests? That is probably the reason why this is occurring. They've probably gone to a university and then they will have IQ tested the people at the university, the top university from that country, and then found that the average IQ is 85. And of course, if somebody is at university, then they're going to be the most intelligent people there. So you would imagine that if there was an average IQ of, say, 70 in an African country, that somebody that had an IQ average of 85 would actually be at university. So I think that explains why there is this 15-point discrepancy between the traditionally accepted average IQs and the new IQs. And as I say, this was confirmed basically by this Nigerian researcher who stopped random people on the street and got them to do IQ tests in Nigeria and found that, yes, the average IQ was 70. So people point this out and they get accused of being racist, effectively. Mark Collett did a debate the other day with Bob from Speaker's Corner, and it was about Christian nationalism, which is this multicultural view that countries should accept in anybody, whatever race they are, if they just say that they're Christian, which of course is nonsense. It's not based on biblical teachings whatsoever. It's just based on modern day church teachings. And one of the questions that he kept putting to Mark was, where are you getting these facts from? Where are you getting these facts from? Like, and Mark should have really just said, well, just Google them. You can see them for yourself, because you can. You can see them on any website which talks about world IQ differences, basically. And normally they'll show you a map of the world, and it will have different shading showing you the countries with the lowest IQ and the countries with the highest IQ. It's not as if this is hidden, but the left still believe that it's all fake. It's all fake science. It can't possibly be true, because we're all a blank slate, aren't we? And of course, that's not true. And this is why this fellow, Nathan Kofnas, this is why he was fired from his college, because he pointed out these IQ differences. And now he's pointing out the fact that AI has flagged up Arday's thesis as being plagiarised. It then emerged that Cambridge had been alerted to potential plagiarism in his thesis and in other papers, that's other papers by Jason Arday, by Plymouth Marjon University Emeritus Professor Dave Harris in 2023. Yet the university only launched an investigation into the matter earlier this month. So they'd known for 2 years that his work was plagiarised, but they did nothing about it. London's Daily Telegraph reported that it had identified more than 100 passages that are identical, or nearly identical, to a 2009 PhD thesis by Paula Zwodiak-Myers, a Brunel University student. So that's not words, that's not sentences, that's actual passages. 100 passages are exactly the same, effectively. On top of allegations of plagiarism, questions were also raised over Arday's supposedly remarkable early life, as he claimed to have risen to the top of academia, despite allegedly being unable to talk until the age of 11, being unable to read or write until he was 18, as a supposed result of autism. Arday also previously boasted of having run 30 marathons in 35 days, partly while suffering from a leg fracture. Now, I would look at that and I would say, well, he's obviously a fantasist. But the Cambridge professors looked at that and they didn't think he's obviously a fantasist. They thought, oh, what a fantastically inspirational story. And they just fell for it, hook, line and sinker. Now, is that Jason Arday's fault that the Cambridge University fell for that? It's not Jason Arday's fault. It's the Cambridge University's fault. Again, they're the ones that promoted him into this position. Amidst the controversy, the previous media darling resigned on August 5th, claiming that the relentless accusations, speculation and public commentary have taken a profound toll on me and on those I love. Well, how much of a toll does he think it's now going to take on his family now that he has killed himself, if that is what he has done? I mean, it sort of makes a mockery of him being concerned about his family here, doesn't it? Because he's sort of left them without a father now. Less than 10 days later, he was found dead. A spokesman for London's Metropolitan Police said on Friday that his death is being treated as unexpected, but is not believed to be suspicious. The left-wing Guardian newspaper reported that the force is understood not to believe anyone else was involved in the death. Now, perhaps that's the way that they describe suicide nowadays, just to say it's unexpected, but it's not suspicious. I guess that shows that it shouldn't have actually happened, but it's not suspicious. I mean, I guess they would say if it was a disease or if it was a heart attack or whatever. Despite limited information about the circumstances of his death, prominent left-wing figures were quick to blame the media scrutiny and quote-unquote racism for Arday's death. For example, far-left Labour MP Nadia Whitcomb said that Arday was hounded by the British press in a way that went far beyond scrutiny, was disproportionate, and simply would not have happened to a white middle-class person in the same position. Well, a white middle-class person would not be in that position, because Arday was only put in that position because he was black. And that was his qualification to be the made into a professor, was the fact that he was young, that he was black, and that he had these fantastic stories that he had told. A white person would not have been put into that position. A white person would not have been made a professor if a white person had come out with these stories. They would have just said, well, we already have lots of white professors. Sorry, we don't need your inspirational story. So it's not that this was disproportionate or this was happening to him because it was black. It was happening to him because he clearly did not merit being a professor. He did not have the intellectual acumen required to be a professor. And if you are a professor, your work is going to be held up to scrutiny because you're supposed to be at the very top. I mean, when these researchers, when they publish papers, they're peer reviewed. And that means that other people from with the same qualifications as themselves read through the paper and they critique it and they criticize it. And in that way, you're supposed to be able to get the best and the most accurate content in these sorts of studies. So your work is there to be critiqued when you're in this sort of a position. So it was not disproportionate. It was not going far beyond scrutiny to ask how is it possible that you could run 600 miles in 6 days with a broken leg when that is a feat that is beyond most people to run that much anyway, let alone with a broken leg. And that's not going far beyond scrutiny or being disproportionate. This opinion was widely shared among the broader left, including the National Education Union, the NEU General Secretary. Well, we know all about the National Education Union, don't we? We know that they want to turn as many students as they can into Antifa. They are literal militant leftists that run our schools. The teachers are militant leftists, the ones that are signed up to these unions. We know this because they had a conference a while back and they invited Zach Polanski to speak at it. And one of their specific concerns was, how can we turn the youngsters at our schools into anti-fascists? So literally, the whole conference was about how can we turn school children into Antifa? So it's not surprising that they would comment on this. General Secretary Daniel Kabidi, who said on Saturday that our day had been the target of a public and brutal takedown that unleashed a tirade of racism. I haven't seen anything racist. I haven't seen anybody referring to him by racial slurs. All I've seen is people being critical of the university for promoting this unqualified man into his position and saying the only reason he was given that position is because he was black. I mean, it's quite clearly that was the reason why they did this. Universities have been tasked that they have to have as many black professors as they have white professors, effectively. And if they don't manage to provide these black professors, then clearly, if everybody is a blank slate and all things being equal, clearly that must mean that the university is being racist. So the only way that they have to get more black people into being professors is to promote them to being professors when they aren't actually qualified to. It's exactly the same as, how are they going to get so many black people into the police as they need to get into the police? Well, because a lot of black people have a criminal record, it means that the police have to ignore the fact that the person has a criminal record. And of course, last year we learned about black people being promoted to being police who actually had a criminal record of rape and child abuse. And this was known by the Board of Diversity that okayed the position for them to be given that role as a policeman. People have flagged it up and said, look, this person has charges against him for child abuse and rape. And the Board for Diversity, Equity and Inclusion said, well, don't worry about that. We'll just make him into a policeman anyway, because we need to make up the numbers. And it's the same thing here. Now, that's not being racist. That's not a criticism of black people. That is a criticism of the diversity, equity and inclusion agenda. And all the criticism that I have seen of Jason Arday hasn't actually even been of Jason Arday. It's been of Cambridge University for not spotting that this man was a fantasist and that he was telling them falsehoods. That's the criticism. It's not of Jason Arday himself. The effect has been chilling. It tells black people and others from underrepresented backgrounds that entering prominent public positions will make you a target, he said. Well, how does he come up with that? Of course, if you are going to be a public figure, then you will be held up to scrutiny. But that's not only black people that are held up to scrutiny. That's everybody that is held up to scrutiny, and rightfully so, when they're an academic. Leftist activist and author of This Is Why I Resist, Don't Define My Black Identity, Dr. Shola Moss Shogbambimanu, said that those involved in scrutinising our day were murderers. This is exactly what you wanted to achieve, she said. Well, I don't think anybody wanted to achieve that at all. What they wanted to achieve was to shame Cambridge University. They certainly didn't want the man involved to kill himself. And before we went on air, I don't know if I discussed this in the podcast that I did with Grandpa Dan, but I looked at this and I said, this is the sort of thing that a white person might commit suicide over, the embarrassment, the shame. But I don't think that Jason Arde will, because black people are only half as likely as white people to commit suicide. So I looked at the statistics and I thought black people aren't very likely to commit suicide. One of the groups with the lowest actual numbers for suicide. So I was quite surprised when he did commit suicide. And that's clearly not what people wanted to achieve, as this Dr. Shola insists here, that is actually what people wanted to achieve. She says, I told you, I knew you wanted to kill him or get him killed. I mean, where does she get that from? I haven't seen any hatred directed at Jason Arde. She said, I hope you are all satisfied now. Every single one of you bloody evil racists, you white supremacists, waste of human freaking space. Those of you that jumped on this bandwagon to publicly execute him for what? Who held him to a different standard than you hold white people. May you all get exactly what you deserve, she said. So she thinks that he was held to a different standard than white people. Does she think that white people tell all these tall stories and they just get believed by Cambridge University? I think if a white person said that he had run 600 miles in 6 days with a broken leg, didn't know how to speak until he was 16, didn't know how to read and write until he was 18, do you think that Cambridge University would have said, oh, yes, we believe that. We believe all those completely impossible feats. It will make you into a professor. It's not that he was held to different standards than white people. In fact, he was. He was held to a much lower standard than white people. A much, much lower standard. Meanwhile, Mayor of London Sadiq Khan said in a statement, Jason Arde was the victim of a pernicious public shaming that other people in his position simply wouldn't have faced. His death was a tragedy. But once again, it should be a wake-up call for all of us. Well, most professors wouldn't have to face that sort of criticism because all the other professors, I hope, have been made into professors because of their work rather than because of the tall tale that they told. For his part, Prime Minister Andy Burnham remarked that Arde's death was a tragedy on so many levels. The recently installed leader said it was not the time for rushing to judgment, but rather a moment for reflection. And that's quite clever what he has said there. I mean, he's sort of implying that it may not just have been the journalists at fault. He could be thinking that it's Cambridge University who are at fault, which, of course, I think are at fault. It could be that he thinks it's a bit of both. So he's been quite clever there in what he said. It's sort of like ambivalent, isn't it? It's non-committal, just really saying that it's a very sad thing that it happened. Others pushed back on the narrative that critics were responsible for Arde's death. Professor Matt Goodwin said, white people are not to blame for Jason Arde's death. Right-wing people are not to blame. The media is not to blame. What started this is a diversity, equality and inclusion regime that put somebody in a role he was not qualified to fulfil. And they did so simply because of his race. Editor of Spiked, Tom Slater, said that the media and fellow academics were forced to scrutinise Arde because Cambridge University had failed to do so in the first place. Yes, if Cambridge University had actually done their job, then none of this would have needed doing. They chose to believe Arde's story because it furnished their worldview and lent them some pious PR. They rebuffed the allegations until it was impossible to do so. Arde's resignation came within hours of Cambridge finally announcing an investigation into his record. Now, we also said, myself and Grandpa Dan, that is, we were also saying that now that he's resigned, they won't actually do this investigation. And they came out and said, oh, yes, we're still going to do the investigation, even though he's resigned. Now that he's killed himself, will they still do the investigation? That's the question. He continued, they put him on a pedestal from which he was always going to be knocked off. Not because he was black, but because he was a fraudster and a fantasist, elevated by an academic system that has come to reward dazzling tales of victimhood, even outright lies, Slater wrote, adding, I won't say Cambridge has blood on its hands, but it does have a lot to answer for. So I think you see here the common sense approach is coming from the people on the right, and the hysterically anti-white position trying to blame all of this on the people pointing out that the emperor wears no clothes rather than the people claiming that the emperor was clothed is the people on the left. I mean, it just exemplifies really the different ways that people on the right and people on the left look at things. The people on the left do not want to hold themselves up to scrutiny. They just want to silence people, whereas people on the right would always much rather have a debate and talk about these things, and we don't like to believe badly of our opponents. Whereas the people on the left seem to think that their opponents are irredeemably evil and must not be allowed to speak, must not be allowed to say anything that anybody else can hear, and should be cancelled and silenced. And effectively, that's what we see here. I mean, have you ever heard such a hateful screed as from Dr. Scholar here? The things which she was saying, calling the people being critical of this bloody, evil, racist, white supremacist waste of human freaking space. And she's using racial slurs there. And she's saying, accusing her opponents of wanting him to get killed. And it's quite offensive, the things that she has actually said there. Especially using racial slurs there, referring to people as white supremacists, but you'll never see the left ever acknowledge that that is actually a racial slur. But it is. If I was to refer to a black so-and-so, I would be using a racial slur, wouldn't I? Yet it seems that the left get away with this all the time. Well, it's very sad that Jason Arday has died. I certainly did not wish him ill, and I certainly did not wish ill on his family, who now have to pick up the pieces without him. Unfortunately, we have another negative news story, which also follows on from what I was talking about last week. And this is actually in Ceuta. And I was pronouncing it wrong. I was pronouncing it Quetta. And that's because I'd watched news reports on it by the BBC and by GB News. And they were all referring to it as Quetta. But apparently it is Ceuta, the way that it is actually pronounced. Now, we've been told that the majority of the invaders have gone back to Morocco, but the people that are actually there reporting on this have said that is not so. There were also reports of another invasion that took place at the weekend that was being hushed up, but there are also reports saying that that didn't happen. What did happen is that at least five underage girls have allegedly been raped in Spanish Ceuta following the migrant invasion. This report comes from Breitbart. The mass invasion of illegals from Morocco into the Spanish enclave of Ceuta last month allegedly coincided with at least five young girls being raped. According to a report from the local El Pueblo de Ceuta newspaper, the University Hospital of Ceuta treated at least five girls under the age of 14 years old after they were apparently raped. The girls are believed to have come to the Spanish territory during the coordinated storming of the border by around 72,000 migrants within a 24-hour period on the final day of July, while Spanish authorities claimed to have returned around 70,000 back to Morocco within days of the invasion. Local reports indicated that thousands more likely remained in the city, and I was seeing reports that were saying that at least 6,000 were still there in the city. People are too frightened to go out. The beach has been absolutely ruined. There have been attacks on people, things being set fire to. And as we see here, there's been rapes of young girls, children. This was particularly true of migrants under the age of 18, as unaccompanied minors typically have a better chance of being granted asylum in EU countries. However, given the small city's limited capacity to house migrants, many were left in a vulnerable position, apparently including the young girls in question. An emergency doctor at Ceuta University Hospital, Susanna Acaso, confirmed that her hospital had dealt with multiple cases of migrant girls allegedly being raped. She said there have been cases of rape of migrant girls who are living on the streets of the city because there isn't enough room for them in the children's shelters. It is not that they don't want to help them, but rather that there isn't enough space for them, Acaso asserted. The population that has arrived is mostly made up of young, strong adults. Therefore, we are having many problems. The emergency room doctor said on the day of the invasion, her hospital was overwhelmed by migrants seeking medical attention for injuries caused by the border fences, wounds from rocks in the sea, and shoulder dislocations. Quite amazing, isn't it? They break in to the place and then they present themselves for first aid to the state at the hospital there. In total, nearly 100 migrants are believed to have drowned while making the short sea crossing from Morocco to Ceuta during the 24-hour influx. Despite nearly 2 weeks elapsing since the invasion, Acaso said that the number of migrants being treated in her hospital has only increased. She said that patients are arriving with diseases that have the potential to become epidemics. We don't know if people are arriving with tuberculosis, hepatitis, or other types of disease that as of today we also will not be able to detect, she said. These are health risks for our own population that we are assuming and that we cannot control. In the future, we will be able to know if all this has had a consequence for the population. So, and this is something we don't often hear about, all the diseases that these people bring with them that have mainly been eradicated in the West. The reports of alleged child rape came as thousands of Ceuta residents took to the streets over the weekend for a bipartisan and cross-faith demonstration to demand that the socialist government of Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez and the European Union protect them from further migrant invasions. In total, around 9 residents of the Spanish-controlled area of North Africa joined the protest, calling for better border controls. Another issue that actually happened here is that a nationalist group went over there, Núcleo Nacional, and they were sent, they were deported, basically, by the authorities. So the authorities have allowed these Moroccans to just run around, causing chaos, unrestrained chaos, and the actual nationalists that went there to help, the Spanish nationalists, they've actually been arrested and been deported. And where it says here in total around 9 residents of the Spanish-controlled area joined the protest, I should imagine that there was a lot more than 9. That's probably a typo there. The mass influx of migrants from Morocco came in the wake of a Spanish Supreme Court decision in June, which found that authorities could not immediately return migrants who arrived by water. This created a legal loophole in the case of Ceuta, as migrants could simply walk out to sea on the Moroccan side of the border and technically arrive by water in Spanish territory just metres down the coastline. How on earth did they manage to drown just making that short distance? I guess it's because black people have difficulty swimming, as we talked about on Friday. It also came in the wake of the leftist government in Madrid embarking on a mass amnesty scheme for illegals living in Spain, which looks to regularise upwards of 1 million illegals this year. I think it's more like about 1.5 million illegals that they are naturalising and turning into Spanish citizens. And of course, once they are Spanish citizens, they will be able to invite their family. So it could be 5 or 6 million people that Spain is actually welcoming from Africa into Spain just by legalising 1 million of these illegals. And at the same time as doing that, they are deporting white Russian people with businesses over there that contribute to the country rather than take from it. Critics warn that such a programme would serve as another pull factor for prospective illegals looking to reach EU land. And that's the problem with legalizing illegals. It then means that that country becomes a magnet for other illegals because they think, well, if I can just get to that country and stay there doing whatever for a few years, eventually they will legalize me anyway. And of course, that's another incentive to them to actually do this. So it's very sad that these rapes are now occurring in Ceuta, but of course that is predictable wherever you have these illegal immigrants that come from these sorts of countries. You're going to see an increase in the rapes of small children, unfortunately. And until these people are deported, things are only going to get worse, aren't they, really, unfortunately. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.